And welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with your hosts, Daniel.
And Daniel.
Daniel, we're actually, like, kind of on schedule today.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm glad we're filming today. And I'll tell the viewers why. And this episode, this was our originally scheduled plan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And then we were able to schedule an interview, which we'll be doing. We'll talk about that a little bit more here in a bit. So we rescheduled it till tomorrow. But it just so happens that we're still free today.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're like, you know what? Why are we postponing the episode? Let's just go ahead and get a leg up on it. So viewers who are watching us live, you're going to get a double whammy if you want to. Twitch.tv/everydayboardgames. Check us when we watch film live.
Yep.
Viewers of the podcast, if you're listening to this later on, well, then you already know that the other episode's not already out yet. But you'll see a bonus episode if you tune in tomorrow while we're doing this live at twitch.tv/everydayboardgames. We're going to be inviting on a designer. She's been in the industry for a while now. Mm-hmm. Her name is Danielle Reynolds, and she's going to be coming in, and we're going to be interviewing her for our podcast. And we always love it when designers or people in the industry come onto the podcast, and we have more that we will be announcing soon.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to that.
Absolutely. But enough about tomorrow's episode. Let's talk about today's episode.
Or, in the case for our audio listeners, next week's episode.
Or, as far as our theme of this episode, future. Because we are going to be talking about our anticipated games for, hopefully, 2024. They might, as always, they might be later than that. We were listening to our last year's episode just to double-check everything. Yeah. And we found out that about half of them aren't out yet. So, I mean, give or take. We're going to talk about those here in a bit. We'll be reviewing those during the episode. But we just got back from Gamma a few weeks ago. So
Gamma Expo.
The Gamma Expo, that's right. Where, full disclosure, they had us as hosted media. Mm-hmm. Which, if you want to know what that means, it basically just means that they reimburse us for part of our travel to be out there and do some coverage.
They would have given us a hotel room as well.
Yeah. Now, that was Gamma, the association, that paid for that, for us to be at the Gamma Expo. And none of the publishers or games that we're going to be talking about, none of them have given us any kind of payment or anything like that. So keep that in mind. This is legitimately our anticipated list, our top 8 of what's coming out next year. And in some cases, our top 16.
This year is what he meant. The rest of this year.
We
like to leave it after the Gamma Expo, because that's usually when a lot of announcements are made.
That's right. And boy, were there, because we have some ones that were just announced at the Gamma Expo, and we are going to be talking about those, I'm sure, when it comes up.
All right. So with that being said, we also want to remind everybody there is a contest going on right now for a copy or two. It's going to be 2 copies of the game Matches. Would you explain to the people what Matches is?
Yeah, so Matches is a card game, just released by Thing 12 Games. This is their newest release. It is designed by yours truly. You know, full disclosure, again, I am heavily biased. But this is a card game. If you've played any classic style card game, parts of this will feel familiar. But it is unlike all of them.
Yes. Okay?
You're basically trying to match the main number with your numbers. So if someone leads with a 10, I can play any number of cards that add up to 10 to stay in the round. Whoever stays in the round the longest is going to get all the tokens that are added to the pot through play. And everybody else who burns out will instead be working on set collection kind of style and scoring their pairs as they're playing. 2 different ways to play.
Yep.
Very unique twist on that. Amazing production. If you have not seen this in person, go read the reviews on it. Even if people don't like the game, they're still saying that the production is absolutely top-notch.
Oh, yeah. It's
and
really well done.
It really is. So we're going to be sending out 2 copies. We'll pay for shipping. And we will be saying... Creative Chaos can confirm that. We've played her copy. We'll be sending out 2 copies to 2 winners. And there's a number of ways you can enter. Daniel, take it away.
So the ways you can enter is, first off, if you follow us on Twitch or... you can subscribe to us on YouTube. That's 2 entries for the giveaway. You can follow us on our Instagram account. Mm-hmm. That will give you a chance to win the game. And to get a bonus entry, you can email us at everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com. Put in the subject line contest and in the body the passphrase, which we're going to give a little bit later, so pay attention. There is going to be a passphrase. You put that in the body, plus a way to get in contact with you or ship it out to you. Mind you, this is going to be to the contiguous United States, the lower 48.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing is, if you want bonus entries to help us grow on Twitch, you can subscribe to us on Twitch. That gets you 3 bonus entries to a total, if my math is correct, of 7.
7 essentially per week. Well, yeah. I mean, 7 total and then 1 more per week. I think you have a total of like 10 entries if you get all 4 passphrases.
Yes.
A lot of chances to win. And the more you listen to our podcast, the better. Winners. Yep, we're going to draw 2 winners. So you have good odds. So please don't mistake yourself. Try it out. Anyway, let's get into today's episode. Today we're talking about anticipated games. But before we do that, today's April 1st. I had to trick you guys. Daniel, what you've been playing lately?
What I've been playing, there's a few games I want to talk about because I've enjoyed quite a bit of gaming lately, in all honesty. Like, last week I only had the 1 game night, but before that I actually got a couple game nights in. So, one game I do want to talk about, mentioned it kind of in passing last week when we played, when it was my last pick, we played, Village.
Yeah.
This is the other game that we played that game night, is one of the Kinder Spiels that I wanted to get back to the table, and this was Istanbul.
Yeah.
I love this game so, so much. In fact, if you're listening to this podcast right now, this coming Friday, when this podcast releases either on the audio side or on YouTube, this Friday, the review for this game is going to be live on our YouTube channel. This is Istanbul. Fun, interesting, as I put here, worker movement game? Worker drop-off game? Pick up and deliver?
Yeah, route building, maybe?
I don't know. It's so unique how this mechanism works, but all you're really doing is you have a grid of, is it 4x4 of tiles, and you're moving your workers out across this grid, and wherever you drop one worker off or you pick up a worker on your way back, you're going to take the action of that tile. I love that mechanism. It's a racing game at that. The first person to get 8 gems wins the game, or 6 gems, or depending on what the player count is. I think it's 8 gems for a 2-player, 3-player it is.
It's 6 or 5.
Yeah, it's 6 or 5. It's depending on the player count.
Yeah.
But you're getting a certain amount of gems. The first person to hit that wins the game. It just stops there immediately. I really do enjoy what this does. You have like this little unique gambling system in the game. You have this really interesting worker delving, I guess you can say, because you're sending your workers out to do it, but then you have to go pick up your workers, but then you have your shady cousin in the back room over there that you could send out to go do something for you.
Who is currently at the start of the game in prison.
But then you can also like meet up with like the post office or different things, or you can go to a gambling den and try to count what you're going to get on a roll to possibly, you know, get a better resource. Tea house. Or you could go to this other thing and be like, I'm going to roll this, and then you could also get some silver by pushing your luck in a little bit. Yeah. I love everything about this game. You could basically randomize it however you want to set it up. It tells you you can set it up in this way to make it a little bit more efficient for you to build out your routes and stuff like that. So it's set collection, worker placement in a sense, pick up and deliver if you think about it, because you're dropping off and picking up workers. They're just not going to a destination. Yeah. So it's really unique what it does. I don't think I've ever played a game that's anything like this.
No.
But it's quite possibly one of my favorite Kinderspiel games that I own. And honestly, I can see it making higher in my top 100. I only played it the one time. I don't think it was outside in. Now that I've played it a couple more times, yeah, I think this is going to easily be in my top 100 from now on.
You know what was so interesting about this game, which I 100% agree with you. Like, this game is amazing. Well, you know what's so interesting about it is that this put Rudiger Dorn on the map for me, right? Mm-hmm. This made his name something that I recognize now. And just because of Istanbul alone, I will play any Rudiger Dorn game. Which we played a number of them, right? Yes. Like Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I have one called Spacewalk, which is like a Mancala thing, right? And it's wild. But if his name is on it, I'm willing to play it because I know it's going to be something unique.
Yeah.
So I
enjoy it a lot. In fact, it's right behind your head right there. It's no longer...
Yes, that's right.
It's in a nice established area for me to reach.
That's right. And hopefully it'll be reached often.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm planning on taking it to my other game group because I think my wife would dig this one.
Absolutely. Cool. The first game I want to talk about is a cooperative party game called Scream the Game, or Scream the Party Game. Yeah. So it came out from Funko Games right at the end here. Unfortunately, rest in peace. You know. Funko
The end of pretty much about October or September last year.
It was around October last year, around Halloween time. And this is a party game for 3 to 8 players, and it's cooperative. And you are actively trying to just survive while completing all of the scenes. You have a number of scene cards, and then you have scream cards. Scream cards are like 5 different resources. There's like blood, DVDs, popcorn, a phone, like a home phone, not even like a cell phone, of course. And something else that's escaping me. Maybe a knife or something. And
okay, hold on. First off, did you ever watch the Scream movies?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so the resources, I mean, they make sense, right?
Yeah.
But those are the 5 resources. And then you have scene cards, which need certain resources. Like, I might have one that says, I need 2 popcorn and 2 blood spots. I might have another one that's like just 3 DVDs. And everyone has one of those in front of them, and your goal is to complete all of them as a group collectively.
Okay.
So you have a timer, kind of, because you don't know what the time is. And you don't know how fast it's going to go or how much it's going to count down.
Yeah.
But what you can do, though, is you can take turns as fast as you want. You can either draw a card. You can either force a trade with somebody, where if I straight up hand you a card and you cannot decline my trade, you have to hand me a card of some kind. Okay. We could discuss, so it makes sense. It's like, oh, you need a blood spot? All right, here you go. I need a DVD, though. You know, send it my way. Or you can complete your scene, which is expend the cards, put in the discard pile, done. All of this is going while the app is running. And during the app, at the very beginning of it, you put in all the names of the players. And you can even take pictures, so it shows up as like a contacts list icon.
Yeah.
And you leave your phone in the middle of the table, where as you're playing, it's playing scary music and all that stuff. But every once in a while, you'll get a call. And everyone has to stop what they're doing, answer the call. And of course, a voice actor in the Scream voice will tell you what you have to complete and what you have to do. So he might either taunt you, where all these cards possibly have ghost faces on it, and he'll tell you a certain number, like let's say like 3. If he says anybody with 3 or more of any of my face on their cards has to discard their hand, and it's brutal when that happens because there's no hand limit, but man, it hurts you when that happens.
Especially if you have like 8 cards in your hand.
Right, exactly. But then there's a board with 4 different locations, and if he And that's the next thing he could do. I think it's like stalk or something, where he goes to a location, and the next time he calls, anybody who is at that location needs to discard the card that he says right then at that second call. If you can't do it, you dump your hand as well. But then he can go after a single player, which when he does that, he names the player and how many of something he wants, like 4 popcorn.
Okay.
And if it's you, we put the figure in front of you, and then we have until he calls again to get you those items before he calls back. Because if he calls back, then he kills you, we immediately lose.
Oh, man.
It is brutal, and it's intense, too. Because then after a certain amount of time, it starts counting down. We saw the 3-minute timer that was just counting down at the time. We did beat it. It was nice and simple. Like, once the deck runs out, you don't even reshuffle. You just flip the deck over, and you just keep going, you know? Like, everything's that's designed. And even in the rules, one of the best parts about it was that it even said, it's like, well, since there has to be a 1-for-1 trade, if whoever the Ghostface is going after, if they don't have even enough cards in their hand, your strategy is take really fast turns, because that's the only way they're going to get enough cards to hopefully survive. It works really well. It's a simple game. It's one of those things where it's like you just finish and you're like, oh man, that was awesomely stressful. Super thematic. I love that it's calling certain people. And there was even one point where, like, you pass the phone in front of the person who's supposed to answer it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we passed it to our friend Clint, and he was like, I'm just gonna let it go to voicemail. We're like, bro, like, no, you gotta... And then I got a really great chuckle when he did that, so it was such a fun game. I like it. Scream the Game. Definitely worth your time. It's like $20 too.
Yeah, I'll really have to check that one out. I mean, I wanted to check it out. It's just that 3 to 6 players, they tend to be better at a higher player count. I normally mostly play 4 players.
It worked very well. Did you ever play Last Defense? I know you had it for a
long time.
Long time ago. Yeah. I feel like it took some of that, right? It's like the app is just more or less like just a thematic timer.
Okay.
But it adds in that little, like, every once in a while chaos happens because of the app.
Yeah, I'll check that one out. All right, so the next game I'm going to talk about is a game that I've been looking forward to getting to the table once I found out it was coming out. And honestly, it didn't even make my anticipated list last year because it only was announced towards the end of last year, I think. End of last year. We just recently received it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Wormspan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I finally played the dragon version of Wingspan, and there's a lot of differences compared to it. It has a little bit of the same mechanistic feeling that mm-hmm. you would get with Wingspan. But yeah, it's a beautiful artwork retheming to it. And this one, instead of, you know, going down your list here, what happens is either you're going to play a dragon out, you have coins. That's basically going to be your resources. Instead of losing cubes, you're going to be using coins as you go. And once all your coins are gone, you can't really take another action because it's going to cost everything for coins. But there's ways to get more coins, so this way you have extra actions. You could choose just to pass the rest of the round. This way you could save coins to have more actions for the next round. You're only ever going to play four rounds of the game. And the three options for you really are you're going to play a dragon out, but you got to make sure your cave is excavated to a certain point. This way you can play extra in that row. You're going to excavate your cave, which is you're going to play down cave cards, which means now you can entice dragons into said cave. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to take a tour and check on your dragons in your cave with your little tour guide, dragon guild, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's how normally in Wingspan you would do, I'm going to do this section in this area, so this is going to give me cards, and then I'm going to activate all my dragons this way. You're going the other way with this guy because he's going to start here, and he's going to keep going down that list until he hits a stop sign, and then you're going to get every single thing on that list depending on what your dragons say, what that field says. And you're going to keep doing that as you're going through the game. And like I said, you're going to play your coins. You can only ever explore your caves three times per cave. So you can explore nine times. But it's going to cost you a lot more to do it as you're going.
Gotcha.
Because everything costs like a coin when you're doing it. Sometimes you'll have to pay extra coins because sometimes the dragon cost is going to cost a coin. So a lot of the stuff, if you're familiar with Wingspan, you're going to be fine with this one.
Mm-hmm.
There is quite a bit of changes. I love the little dragon guild as you're going because every time you get to the dragon guild, you can get more resources. Once you get to a halfway point, you can also put one of your cubes out there and you can either get more resources, rewards, or points for the end of the game. And there are still end of game scoring cards. It's beautifully done. I'm becoming more and more a fan of Connie Vogelman. I've played two games of her that I've really enjoyed. Apiary was her first game. Wormspan is the second one. Both times with Stonemeyer, and she's got some interesting takes on things. So I really did enjoy this one a lot. It's beautifully produced. Honestly, if you have a problem with birds, like a lot of people is like, the theme doesn't interest me, you might want to check this one out. It's kind of interesting. Mind you, it's a little bit heavier than, say, Wingspan. So just with that caveat. But no, I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I've been curious to try this one because maybe this might be... I don't know what it was about Wingspan specifically. I just didn't ruffle my feathers, if you will. Right. Or like, I don't know. Yeah, it didn't jive with me that much. Like, it was good. I see why people like it. It wasn't mine,
mm-hmm.
my style, right? And I'm curious to try this one just to see if this is any better.
If you find Wingspan a little too convoluted, this one's going to be a little next step, but that convolution might be better for you.
Right.
How's it going, ABQ Plays? And agrees with me ABQ about Plays. Wingspan.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, the next game I want to talk about is also from Funko Games, and this is so far their most recent release after... they were, like, effectively let go and laid off.
Yeah, you told me about this.
Yeah, this is called Bosa. And the way this game works is that you're building colorful buildings on the coast of Bosa Island. I don't know what the theme is. But it's beautiful components, and it's actually in the same size box as the screen one. So it's kind of long, and it's, rectangular.
Yeah, one of those long boxes, guys.
Yeah. But this is definitely, like, an action selection kind of, like, Euro-y game.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it really neat is that you have... three different tracks, which, by the way, beautiful screen-printed wooden pieces for the tracks.
Okay.
Great, great cards. It even includes, like, a little, like cardboard, like, porcelain dish. It looks like a porcelain dish, and mm-hmm. it's a piece of cardboard. beautiful components, your pieces move around. Anyway, but I'm getting off track because it works. It's a pretty, pretty game. Like, honestly, it's gorgeous. But the way the game works is quite simple. You are going to be taking a card and you place it into one of either your rows or columns.
Mm-hmm.
The restriction is the game will last 15 rounds. You start with one building at the far top left corner, and you can either put it to the right of a building that's already in there, or on top of a building.
Oh, on top of a building.
Yeah, so you're going to be making four rows of four, right?
Okay.
And so if you put it on top of a building, you cover up the bottom half of the card, but you still see the action on the top half. So it kind of has this nice little overlay thing going on.
Okay.
But, and you can't skip over spots. Like, I can't just put it, like, as far right as I want. No, it has to be on either the next one. And, like, I can't, like, throw a second card on a column that doesn't already have a second card in the previous column. But that's a minor thing. But because of that happening, when you place it down, you choose to either do all of the actions in your column or all of them in the same row.
Okay.
And immediately follow those actions from the oldest one to the newest one. And you take every action. Kind of like Gnar, in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But way more impactful, because a lot of the actions will let you get more resources. Some will let you get coins. Some will let you trade coins for resources and or victory points. Okay. Some will trade victory points or sets of resources for victory points. Some will just be flat. There's four different colors of buildings as well. Or no, I think like maybe even six different colors of buildings. And you have endgame objectives. Like one of them might say, you get 8 points for every quadrant of your city that have all different colors. And this does one of the smartest things I've seen with endgame objectives. It gives you four, and it says, at the end of the game, pick two of them. Why doesn't more games do that? Like,
yeah, here's your
why
four.
Make your decision at the beginning when you don't know what's going to happen,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, here's four. Aim for what you want, but score two at the end of the game. That's all you can score. And it worked really well. It played in like, yeah, seriously, right? Why doesn't more games do that? And it worked really well. Beautiful components, very inexpensive. I'm thoroughly impressed with this. This, my daughter doesn't like games like this all that much,
mm-hmm.
but just the fact that you can combo, you can put this one there, you can score all the ones in the row, so you're thinking about where you're putting them, you're also considering endgame objectives. This really, like, if I didn't know about the design team and their ultimatum, what happened,
yeah,
and like this should have been a highlight of their gaming.
Yeah.
It was so cool how it worked, and I knew nothing about it before it was released. I bought it just because of the Prospero name on it or the Funko Games name on it, and I'm very happy I did. It's absolutely worth your time. Go buy it. Bosa.
All right, cool. The third game I'm going to talk about on my list real quick is a really little quick card game. We talked about Gnar. This is another Pandasaurus game. We talked about that game night, the 1A, 1B, because we really enjoyed both of these games. And this one is Mind Up. I really did enjoy how this game worked because it's so simple, mm-hmm. but yet it's so smooth, too.
Yeah.
So you have like a scoring pile that everybody has. One person will shuffle them up and then put them out in a row, and then everybody is going to say have that same scoring pile. Everybody else will take whatever is there. So it's like 5, 2, 3, 4, 1 type thing. And you're going to put it in the same row, whoever randomized it. Then what you're going to do is you're going to take a hand of cards. I can't remember how many it is. It's 5 or 6, something like that.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to do is you're going to basically simultaneously bid, in a sense, whoever plays. So there's going to be a set of 4 or 5 cards, depending on the player count, in the middle row. And you're all going to basically bid on a certain card. So if I want to get the one that's lowest in the row, I maybe want to put it a low card because it's going to go scoring, or you're going to pull those cards basically in timelines. Whoever plays the lowest card is going to take the first card. Whoever plays the highest card is going to take the last card. And so you're trying to get that nice little push and pull, like, okay, which one am I going to do? Because the card you take is going to go into your scoring pile. So in the first part of the game, that scoring pile, that first card might only score you 1 point for every card in there.
Mm.
Or it could be scoring you 5 points for every card in there. So the first time you're doing something is probably not the best in a way, because you're just going to try to determine. But if the five is the first one scoring, in the next round, you really want to go for green cards, because that's what's in your scoring pile is, because you're going to put your scores, your cards that you collect, in the different scoring piles based on their color. So if the first card you get is green, all your other greens are only ever going to score in that pile. And some of those scoring cards will have also either positive points or negative points that will add to your score. And you're playing over a set amount of rounds. I think it's, what, four rounds or something like that. And whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. What I really, truly liked about this game, though, is when you play the end of a round, the cards that you ended up scoring become your next hand, and now you're bidding on those cards again eventually when they come back out there. And so you're not going to really see the entire deck. And that was like my favorite part of that game, was that I just scored these cards. Now I know they're coming back eventually. So how do I want to set this up again?
Yeah, exactly. Now that was one of my favorite parts about it too. It's like, yeah, you got the sets you wanted, but you're realistically not going to get the same cards that you're throwing out there too. And you're privy to a little information. In each of the three rounds, you draw a single card more.
Yeah.
So you get a little bit more.
But cards.
Yeah, it's just enough to feel good. Yeah. It worked really well.
I do like this one a lot. I knew I was going to like it. I pre-ordered it right away. You ended up getting a copy from the Gamma Expo. Yep. And we both just thoroughly enjoy it. I don't see this ever leaving my collection, because it's one of those great little small filler games that are not difficult to teach, not difficult to learn either.
Yep.
So, yeah, Pandasaurus knocked it out of the park back-to-back. We played that one and Gnar in the same game night.
Mm-hmm.
And both those games were the highlight of our game night.
Absolutely. All right, the next game I want to talk about is a two-player roll-and-write game that's I Split, You Choose.
Oh, this is a Kanitia.
This is a Kanitia. It's Marabunta. Forgive me if I mispronounce that. I don't know what it means. But Marabunta is... it's an area control game where you roll six dice and you have a tile that has some kind of ability. And each round, whoever is the person who splits the dice and the tile, you split it into two piles. So I might put like the purple die here, the yellow die that has like a four or three on it, a zero, which is always colorless, and then maybe like a victory point tile and something else here. And I put it into two groups. And then my opponent gets to choose which of those two groups that they take and immediately activate all of them, right? Okay. And that timing is actually really important, because if they take a tile that will cut you out of an area, they're going to do it more than likely. So you're trying to maneuver around them. And then after they've used up all their dice, you use your dice. And then you try to recover from what they outsmarted you on. There was one move where I thought I was being so clever. I played this with my son yesterday.
Oh, you're not going to be clever around your son.
Well, I mean, I put up a decent fight. I mean, he still destroyed me, but I put up a decent fight. It was like 27-37. It was a pretty significant win on his behalf. But there was one point where I split up. I was like, awesome. Like, I know exactly what he's going to take, what he's not going to take. This is going to work out perfectly. I can do this. And he takes the pile and he's like, yeah, and you can't use any of those dice. And I was like, wait, what do you mean? And I looked at it, and it was like, because of how he laid down his markers, he completely blocked me out of my option, and I really couldn't use it. And I was like, wait a minute, I planned this out. It's not supposed to work this way. And he just, like, he figured that out. And it was brilliant to watch, and just what it's doing is really neat. Like, because some of the dice faces, like, will give you, like, little loot crates, right? And you can mark off something on the loot crate that will let you get abilities once you've filled in all of the crates on that spot. So it might let you add an anthill, which can be placed anywhere, but most of the time you have to put it adjacent to your numbers already. Each of the six dice have a color, one for each of the regions, and they do have symbols on it, which, to make it colorblind friendly, thank you. Not a hard thing to do, and you did it. Thank you. Yep. I couldn't see the colors. I could see the shapes, though.
Nice.
Awesome. And so... where was I at this? Yes. So you're doing this area control, and like the numbers are 1, 2, or 3, which you could put in the regions that are color coded. But if you roll a zero, that could be placed anywhere. It's just a black zero. So you can place it in any region. It's just worth zero influence for you. But it helps you wiggle your way onto different regions, because you have to go adjacent. So if I don't have a yellow die that could bridge me over to the red section, I could put down the zero, and then now I'm in the red section, or I could put my three or whatever.
Okay.
At the end of the round, or at the end of the game, you look at each of the six regions. Whoever has the most total control, which is you add up your numbers of your color, will get the number of victory points that you've marked throughout the round on the leaf, which is also a dice symbol. Super cool. If you mark a place with a crate, or you gain a spot that has a cupcake on it, you're going to be marking off the points for that. Cupcakes ascend in points by the end of the game. My son was getting 3 points every time he got a cupcake, which was obscene. And yeah, it's and then the area control at the end, the ice what you choose, it does everything right, and it was really intriguing. And I had never played a Kinesia Roll'n'Write before this that I enjoyed anything close to this. But everything about this game was rocking. Metabunta, another recommendation for me.
All right, so the final game I'm going to talk about today is a game that I talked about recently, part of my challenge list. This one is part of the 5x10 challenge that I have. It's one of the five games that I want to play at least 10 times because it's a campaign-style game that I've been playing with another group of mine. And this one is Role Player Adventures. We finally got this back to the table, was able to play it some more. We had to actually restart the campaign because we did not remember how to play it because it's been so long. So we just took the characters we already had, restarted the game. My wife decided she didn't want to play the character that she created. She wanted to do something different instead. And I'm like, okay. So we just gave her one of the starting characters. She takes the stats, name it however she wants. She just takes the starting stats and the equipment. And we play it from there. And yeah, no, we had a blast playing this back on the table. So we played it twice in a row. That's how much we enjoyed. We played the first two scenarios, which were the first two scenarios that we played beforehand. And then we paused and just never got back into it. The plan is we're going to try to play it again this month of April. And then at least once a month, basically, to try to get it in. Because I have two expansions for it that we want to get played. It's a fun little co-op dice rolling game. You're basically trying to situate a pool of dice, and then you're trying to roll those dice and try to meet the numbers basically on the either the skill check or the fight, the combat dice. And so the way it works is you have a choice sometimes that if you're doing a skill check, you either need to meet the number or you need to meet the color. Or sometimes, and it means when it means like, so if you got to be a green die, it's got to be green, and there's a number on there. So you need to be a green 2 or higher. But if it's not a solid line, but rather a dash line or a double line, it has to be the exact number of that color. But the bottom half of it means, or it could be a blue die of this number or higher. So you have to make that choice in there, and then you're expending your stamina based on your stats to choose which dice we're going to be pulling out. So it tells you what your dice pool is, whether it's the combat dice or the skill check dice. So like if you're doing a skill check, you have if you're doing a skill check one, it's like 4 dice. You can give away one of your fatigue cube or your stamina cubes, put into your fatigue pile, and you can pull that specific color die out of your out of the bag. If not, you randomly pull the dice until you meet your dice pool.
Interesting.
Okay. And then you roll the dice, and then you're like, okay, we can do this. And then you can start playing your cards, and you can play your cards out and say, hey, I'm going to play this. We're going to add this die, roll it. Now we have another green die in there because of my familiar. Or I'm going to use my familiar here to pull out a multicolored dice. This way we can play with that. And that die will count for either a blue or green, whatever it is. And then my character is all about, since I'm playing a sorcerer apparently, it's all about the blue and green die. So I do a lot of mitigation based on my card plays. And so when you play a card, it goes either into your discard pile and you can't play it again until your next round, then it can go back into your hand. Or if you play a card that gets set, it stays down there until you do a rest, and then you can take those cards back up into your hand.
Gotcha.
So yeah, no, it has been a fun, fun game to play again. I really do enjoy this one. I want to finish this campaign. And it's, like I said, it was one of the 5x10s. I have 2 solo games as well as 3 campaign games. I've got 2 of the 3 campaign games played so far. So we'll see what happens. Okay. Role Player Adventures.
That's awesome. Okay. The last game I wanted to talk about. I'm a big fan of like casual card games. Like, and you know that. Like, listeners of the podcast know this. There's a reason I designed a game like that, right? And one of my favorite things in any card game is that moment where you just sit down and go, all right, let's go. And you have your hand of cards and you're ready, right? And you stare somebody down and then just the chaos ensues from there, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I want to talk about this game that I played a number of times since the Gamma Trade Show. I played it first there, and now I played it a couple times since then. It's called Kabanga.
Gamma Expo.
Gamma Expo, sorry. I'm still not used to it. I apologize. The Gamma Expo. Kabanga by Amigo Games. And this game is really cool. It has numbers, I think, 1 through 12 of 4 different colors of cards. And you lay out a couple of random numbers at the beginning of it, anywhere from like 1 to 8. And you set those down, and each area has its own suit. So you have blue cards, yellow cards, purple cards, or red cards. On your turn, you have to play one card on top of one of the two discard piles of the same suit. So if I play a blue card, it has to be on either left or the right card. Now, what this means is that you look at the difference between the two cards that are on top of the discard pile, and you're trying to be the first to get rid of your cards. And so when you play that card, let's say I play a 16 down, if the other card's a 14, if there's anybody who has the card in between those numbers, the 15 blue, they can just straight up discard it. And if they do that, you have to draw a card to replace cards in your hand, which is hilarious. So what that means, very simply, I play a card. If you can, you could discard cards and make me have to draw more ones. First one out of the round will cue the end of the game. Everyone scores up points based on the cards and the little symbols that are in your cards mm-hmm. in your hand. You don't want points. Lowest points wins. It's really brilliant because every once in a while, somebody will get stuck with just like a massive jump. They'll play like, they'll have a 14 and they drop like a 7. You're like, wow. And then everyone just throws cards out of their hand. and you have to come out. It's like, all right, that was 5 cards. Great. And you draw 5 cards. You're like, oh, that hurts so bad. You know, and it's absolutely brilliant. Like when that happens. And it has that casual, just like, I love that moment where like the players just look at each other and they lay down the one card that they don't, because it's the least painful at that point.
Yeah.
And then everyone's, woo, thanks for playing that.
Here you go.
What's even better is when somebody plays like that big gap, like the 7 and there's a 14, and you look around the table and everyone's like, wow, okay. And then you're like, how did I not draw cards? What happened? You know, and I dig it so much.
That's cool.
Kabanga by Amigo. Again, man, I don't know how to pronounce half these games. Bosa, Marabunta, Kabanga. So good. I like it. Anyway, very good stuff. So now, real quick, we talked about this at the top of the episode. Speaking of card games, we're going to be talking about this one, how you're going to enter in the contest, and then we're going to be giving you a code phrase. So again, you can follow us on YouTube, or subscribe to us on YouTube. Yep. That's the term there. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitch. Or subscribe to us on Twitch for 3 bonus points. If you do all that, you automatically have 6. Throughout the next 3 weeks, including this week, we did one last week. So if you hadn't gotten that code yet, go listen to last week's episode. Over the next few weeks, though, we'll give you a code phrase. Email us at everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com. In the subject line, put contest. And in the body of that, put a way to contact you and this phrase. Today's phrase is playing with fire.
Yeah, and so again, just put it in the subject line. Tell us playing with fire, or not the subject line. No, subject body. Is contest. Body yep. is playing with fire, and how to get in contact with you. Again, it's in the contiguous United States. So the lower 48.
And now we're going to get into today's episode. As we said at the top of the episode, we're going to be talking about our most anticipated games of 2024. Now, listeners of the podcast will know that this is April 1st. We didn't have any good April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
We did in the previous years, now that I think about it. But we didn't really do anything this year.
It's too much going on right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, too much. Even my son, this is like his favorite holiday. And he was like, I don't know. Didn't really have anything to do. And ABQ Plays, they're trying to sell you solar panels. Okay, it must have been an April Fool's prank.
Yeah, so we're a little disappointed we didn't do April Fool's, but we were also trying to set up some other stuff. So,
right.
Like, normally we wouldn't be recording. No, we would normally be recording today, but
yeah,
because we have plans for next week or for tomorrow.
Right, exactly. And now, to point out the fact that most podcasts and most video channels and all that stuff do their anticipated games for 2024 at the end of 2023, or like the first couple weeks.
Yeah,
we wait till after the Gamma Expo, specifically. I did it right this time. Specifically, I really had to check myself. So that way we have that those announcements and privy to that information a little bit. So there is more of a chance that ours will not be out by the time By the turn of the year, which we found out to be true. But that's true for pretty much any anticipated list. We just don't know when it's going to be.
Yeah, you just don't know. They'll say Q4, but you just never know what's going to happen. Right.
Q4 of what year?
Yeah.
Who knows? And some of these will be also talking. We're also going to do something slightly different this time. And as I said earlier, we listened to our last year's episode just so we can get our list of what we were anticipating from last year. And normally we have separate episodes talking about what was our reactions to those. We're going to combine those this week. So
we're not going to go too much into our 2023 list. We're going to tell you if we played them and what we think of them.
That's because a lot of it was like, if we had already played about them, we probably talked about what we've been playing. Yeah. If we haven't played them yet, we're like,
exactly.
We'll just go into it then. So, with that being said, we also have some honorable mentions, too. And there was a lot of games on our short list. I'll just go into mine real quick, because I'm just going to list them off.
Yep.
Wrath of Fire Island, I announced that not too long ago. That was the new one from Eric Lang and Phil Walker Harding. From
Which still hasn't been announced yet.
No, other it's than not that on Board Game Geek. It was just on a pre-release catalog. That's all I know about it. Seven Impossible Things is kind of like an AR escape room style game. I saw them preview it at the Gamma Expo. Super cool. Really great digital technology. Juicy Fruits Mystic Island. This is an expansion for Juicy Fruits. So I was very excited to hear about that. Ultimatch is on my list, and I'll clarify why in a bit. On my short list, Fairy by Allplay, The Gang by Cosmos, and Pac-Man Corridor from Gigamic. And just because, I mean, I love Corridor, and Pac-Man theme is awesome. But to clarify for Ultimatch, that I'm very much excited for this game, but I'm not anticipating anymore. I was telling you a little bit about my philosophy on it.
Yeah.
Is that if I had already played the game, I remove it from my anticipated list because I'm no longer anticipating what it's going to be. I already know what it's going to be. I'm just excited for it to come out so I can finally get a copy. And that's so, just for me. That was a restriction, not for Daniel or anything.
Yeah, and mine. So for me in the anticipated part of it, I didn't put that onus on me slightly.
Yeah.
So there will be games on here that I have played already, but it's because we are lucky enough to be hosted media for the Gamma Expo. So a lot of the games I played there still count as anticipated because they're not out for sale yet. And so that's for me. But like some of them, it's more along the lines, like for me, the anticipation too, or going along with yours, is I already know how to play something, so it maybe got bumped a little further back than where it would normally be, because part of that anticipation for me is cracking it open, reading the rules, watching a how-to-play video, and teaching the game aspect.
For the first time, right? Yeah.
And so, though it may knock a game, it didn't completely knock stuff off the list.
That's right. All right, cool.
And well, so my short on the mentions. Oh, yeah,
sorry about that. Almost
you know, try to cut me off here.
It happens.
And this is one of the games that I have played before, River Valley Glasswork. I did enjoy it, and I actually played that completely all the way through. It was in one of the game nights at Gamma Expo. There's two games on my list that made my short list that were Kickstarters. They were already on my anticipated list. That's why they didn't make my list now. Mm-hmm. First one being Stellaris Infinite Legacy. This one they're saying is coming out this year. It's about 2-3 years late. So been waiting on this one.
Yeah,
they had it at the Gamma Expo, so I'm hoping June, July it's going to be there. Yep. Unconscious Mind is another one. This one is from... who is this game? Where I can't find my
Unconscious Minds.
It's from the company that made Endless Winter. Artipia Games. No, not Artipia. I can't think of the name right now. But yeah, it's supposed to be coming out. It's supposed to come out last year. It's supposedly coming out this year. I'm looking forward to it because Vincent Dutre and Andrew Bosley art. The other ones
You're
I have
alone.
On my the other ones I have on my list: Undergrove, a foresty type game dealing with mushrooms from Elizabeth Hargrave and a co-designer. Metro Runner from Thunderworks Game. Harvest from the same ones that did Parks, Keymaster Games.
Yes.
That one looks really neat. What else is on my list? Cafe Barras, just because it's a capybara game about capybaras dealing with coffee. And you know me, I love my coffee.
You do. And you love your capybaras.
Another one here, and I do, because I love rodents. Foundations of Metropolis, I'm really looking forward to this one. This was on my short list because I've played a full game a Foundations of Rome. It's just a smaller version of it, so I already know this. Yeah. I'm just anticipating. I already know I'm going to like it.
Yeah,
I already know how to play it. I'm going to buy a copy because I want a smaller version of that massively gorgeous game.
Yeah.
Rajas of the Ganges, Cards and Karma. Mm-hmm. Made my shortlist. The Gang, you mentioned it as well. I saw you play it. I haven't played it. It was outside in.
Brilliant idea. Cooperative Texas Hold'em with deduction.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. And the last one here on my shortlist was Avatar, The Last Airbender, Aang's Destiny. It is a re-theming of Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle, so I'm looking forward to that. I do like Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle a lot. I also love Avatar, The Last Airbender. So bringing those two together, it's going to make me happy.
Very cool. All right, so let's get into our list. Right before we say our anticipated games, we'll tell you what was last year's and why it was, or what we thought briefly.
Yeah.
Then we'll talk about those ones. Shall we get into this?
Let's go.
All right. Our number eights. Well, I'll be starting us off.
You.
That's Tails. Right. This is a different coin. We're playing with the Frosthaven coin again. All right. So my number eight last year was Matrix. It was part of the GIF series.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's even out yet, but it's certainly not out available where I have been given the opportunity to buy it. So I haven't played it yet, but I do feel like I'm going to enjoy it a lot.
And the thing, too, is like not a lot of people carry the GIF series games out here.
Not out here, right. I know there's a lot of stores that do, but again, they're still like stocking a lot of them. And the GIF series only comes out like every... like. I think the last one was 2007 or 2017 was like Link, I think.
Yeah.
So it's been 5 or 6 years, like something like that.
Yeah.
Like maybe even longer. So yeah, Matrix looks cool. But the one I wanted to talk about is a Smirk and Dagger game. And this probably would be higher for me if I actually sat down and looked at it. I only saw it in about 5 seconds in passing.
This was going to be on my short list if I remember the name of it.
Right. This is Hi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is with this game, so I read the background of it. In 1973, the band The Meeples had just broken up after working on their The Vinyl album. And that was their final album that they broke up during the B-side of it. They released the A-side. They were working on the B-side. You have been tasked to try and complete that record. And so it has a big, giant record disc that's in the middle of the table.
Yep.
It's a rondel that actually rotates. And at the beginning of your turn, you rotate the rondel. And you take actions based on that. You're trying to put together parts of the music. And it's just an absolutely silly idea. I purposefully did not look more into it because I already was captivated by that thing.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't need to know anything more about it. I'm gonna buy it because that just sounds crazy awesome.
No, it looked really cool. And again, we kind of talked about it when we were talking about the Gamma Expo. It's from one of those Brazilian companies mm-hmm. or groups that are coming over. So, like, mm-hmm. World Wonders, Marvel, or Comic Hunters, I think is what it's called. And mm-hmm. which, surprisingly, didn't make this list because I totally forgot about it till now. So, yeah, it would have probably been in my top three or so.
Yep.
But hey, list already made. It happens. So a lot of stuff coming over from Brazil. That's the new hotness right now. You had the Germans, you had the Japanese games, and now Brazilian games.
Yeah, I think Brazilian designers are really picking up the pace. But Hi-Fi from Smirk and Dagger looks cool.
All right, so my number eight last year was Unmatched Tales to Amaze. I did play this one. In fact, it's like my top. If we had to do like our top eight anticipated games or played games last year for mm-hmm. 2023, I think it was like my number two. I really do enjoy this one a lot. I love the Unmatched system to begin with, and I love that little co-op aspect to it because it's a great way to teach the Unmatched system without having felt like someone's bullying you because they keep attacking you and stuff like that. And when you're playing like a free-for-all, four against, so you don't feel like ganged up. You're playing against the system.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. But my number eight for this year, my 2024 anticipated game, is a crowdfunded game that I want to say not kickstarted. It was the other one, GameFound, last year,
mm-hmm.
at the end of last year. And this is a new Ryan Lockett game from Red Ribbon Games, Creature Caravan.
Yeah.
This is a card tableau building game where you're going to be using dice placement to set up action selection off your cards that you have. Looks really neat. Of course, always these games have great artwork. Like I said, I backed this one once I found out it is. I like a lot of the Ryan Lockett games. There's like two really massive ones sitting on my pile of shame over here. The Sleeping God system plus Near and Far. So yeah, I really do enjoy the Ryan Lockett series. And so Creature Caravans, yeah, that was going to make my short list.
Cool. All right, number seven. Here we go. That's me again. So last year I had a game that the reason why we actually listened to the episodes, because I was like, I think some of my anticipated games for this year were in last year, if not before. So we listened to last year's episode, and sure enough, this was one of them, Circles by Thomas Singh and Hooch or Hutch, whatever the name of the bandit or band.
Bandit?
I'm still on Hi-Fi here. The company that produces like Carcassonne.
Yeah, Hooch. Yeah.
This game, Circles, it's basically kind of like a roulette style game, except there's like engine building, you flick a marble and it spins around like kind of like a roulette wheel. I did see something that like there's two sides of the board. There's like a western side and there was a roulette side. And from what I read about it online is around September or November of last year, they found out that they released a new box cover, and instead of the roulette side, it's a darts side. Mm-hmm. So apparently, like the gambling theme just seemed a little like uncomfortable. For whatever reason.
It's also really hard to do like gambling games out here. Like if they want to import it into America and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're going to have that association. It's like you can't really do that. So they changed it to darts, which I think is just a fine theme as well. So Circles was the one I picked last year. But this year is kind of a cheat. It is three games that are in a series.
That's what you did last year with Circles.
I mean, no, that's technically... I mean, yeah, there's two games in the box.
But that was exactly what you said.
So these are three separate boxes. Specifically three separate boxes. And that's because this follows the same series. And this wasn't going to make my list initially until yesterday when I played Marabunta. I was like, Reiner Knizia is really getting on these roll and writes really neatly. And this is the Pick-A-Pen series.
Yeah.
The Pick-A-Pen series. So the way these work is it's a roll and write, except you don't have dice. You have big, thick, colored pencils, and on the pencils, they have a number of pips on each of the sides. You roll the dice, pencils, and those are the numbers. The pencil you pick, the number that's on it is what you can write on your spots or whatever that is. So it's basically like, imagine if you had six different colored dice, and then you just take the colored pencil of whatever number it rolls, right? Except it's really simple to make custom ones. You just put different kinds of stickers on it. Very simple. Brilliant idea. I've seen that like once before somewhere else, but Reiner Knizia making a series of three.
This is Amigo, right?
This is Amigo, yep. And it should be coming to the U.S. pretty soon. It's already out now, but I think only in Europe. It's not available in the U.S. yet. Otherwise, I'd have a copy and I would have played it already.
I have one issue with this. One major issue.
Sure.
Hopefully these roll better than the bullet dice from the Gamelin games.
Yes. So I looked at them. They're significantly thick. Like, they are chunky. Like, they're comically oversized colored pencils. They're not like normal pencils. Not like normal D6s. Number two pencils.
Yeah.
D number two pencils.
Yeah, no, because I was just thinking, like, my only gripe when we were looking at them. Like, I hope these roll better, because all I was thinking is those bullet dice things that you get in the Tiny Epic Westerns that did not roll very well at all.
The only thing that I'm worried about, honestly, is I almost never use colored pencils in board games. I instead try to go for markers when possible, just so that way they're darker and they're easier to see. Because, I mean, but they did find a solution for that. They put symbols on each of the different colors on it, and you could just draw the symbols for the colors. So it works out, but it's still, like, it's not going to be as obvious.
All right, cool. My number seven last year was a game I kind of mentioned that was on my short list there. This was Unconscious Mind. Vincent Dutre, Andrew Bosley art. It hasn't come out yet. Still waiting on it. So it was my number seven anticipated. I'm still anticipating it. Didn't make this list this year because of that reason.
Yep.
And then my number seven this year, it's kind of a cheat. I picked one specific game because I'm intrigued by it, but it's another set of the Stefan Feld City Collections. I'm intrigued by Nassau because it's a reprint of a game that's already came out. It's a miniatures type game for Stefan Feld. But the one I picked is the new game that this is the first time he's ever going to release it. and it's kind of got me intrigued. It looks very interesting. And the last one that was part of the series that was completely new, Marrakesh, has jumped up there to be one of my favorite Feld games of all time. So I'm hoping this does the same thing, and this is Kathmandu. It's a set collection, dice placement / dice using game. There's some information out there, but they haven't really explained too much about it. You can go back on the Kickstarter and reread how it goes. But yeah, it looks really neat. It's about exploration. You're trying to get to visit the city of Kathmandu by using your dice in very specific ways to get set collections to help you get the resources that you need to keep moving on that trail. Looks really intriguing. I'm a big fan of Feld. You're a big fan of Feld. Yep. That's why it made my list here. Out of the two, this one intrigued me a little bit more than Nassau. Sure. As someone who's actually been to Nassau, I'm a little sad I'm not as intrigued about Nassau. So,
which is fair.
Yeah, but no.
Well, I mean, just the fact that this is an original game. Yeah. Like, I mean, remakes are great and all.
Mind you, I've never played the original, what is it, Rum and Pirates or something like that? So I never played the original because I don't think it ever came out in America. I don't think it was ever released in the U.S.
No, it was.
But years ago.
Yeah, many years ago, once.
Yeah, and so I'm looking forward to it. I want to try both of them, but the one I specifically picked was Kathmandu, because that was the one that intrigued me more. Like, we were talking about it with our friend Dammit Dom. Like, if I had to choose, I ended up getting both of the games, because I collect these ones, this set. If I had to choose one of them, I would have chose Kathmandu out of the two. The other one looks intriguing, but Kathmandu is just something like, I can see myself making this jump up my Stefan Feld list, too.
100%. Cool. All right. And on to our number six.
Yep.
Starting with me again. All right. So this is one of the few exceptions. I have played an early iteration of this game. But where... The reason I included this...
You forgot last year's.
Oh, yes. Last year. Okay. Yes. Daybreak by Matt Leacock. And another designer, it was a co-design, I forget the other designer's name, forgive me, but Daybreak, this is a cooperative
Matteo
game.
Matteo Minapaci.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, and this is Daybreak about solving climate change or whatever by making solar panels, different renewable resources. Really cool, it's exciting, it's coming out, but I haven't played it yet.
What do you mean it's coming out? It's already out.
But like, you already have a copy, and I haven't gotten the chance to play it yet. So as soon as we do, I'll know how much I like it.
In about 2 weeks, we're going to play it.
Cool.
Because next week we'll play it, because this week is Dammit Dom's pick.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm looking forward to both. Probably.
It? No, 3 weeks, because I think it's your pick after that. It's Dammit Dom, then you, then me.
We'll figure it out. I don't think it's mine, but we'll figure it out. But either way, the one for this year is one of the few exceptions. I know I said, like, one of the things that made me take it off, games like Ultimatch off of my anticipated list, is because I've already played it. I have played an early iteration of this game already. I played a prototype of it, and knowing what I know about the publisher and their abilities to do development work, I played it before it was picked up by a publisher. And I know what publisher it's going to be from. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited to see how it's going to change and what's going to be new about it. This is called I Found Bigfoot from Thing 12. Now, full disclosure, they published one of my games. I'm biased. John D. Wood, who is the designer of it, he is a friend of mine. Fellow budding designer. Awesome dude. So, take that in mind. But I am legitimately anticipating this game. Because some of the things that he does... You're trying to capture photos or capture cryptids. I don't think so.
I know. I think I played it. It was one of the original iterations. We just played the promo what it originally was.
Maybe. We'll talk about
that.
Yeah,
it was at the Gamma 2021.
I don't think so, though.
Okay.
Was it like cards in a like in a circle? Mm-hmm. That's not the one. No, this is a different game. So it was a cool design. I hope he does something with that. But... Yeah, no, this, you have a 3x3 grid of different cryptids. One's obviously Bigfoot, and you have different style. And you take up certain cards, like when you pick one, you can take like adjacent ones, assuming that they are matching like the color or the picture that's on them. And then that also changes values of how much they're worth, trying to get the best pictures. Interesting stuff overall. Again, I played it a number of years ago when it was over Tabletop Simulator with my buddy Johnny Wood, and I just got to give it a shout out because I'm legitimately very excited that hopefully this will be coming out this year. I think they're I don't know how they're planning on releasing it, whether it's Kickstarter or straight to retail, whatever. But either way, I'm buying a copy. And the new art that they've been showing
off. Oh, yeah, I've been seeing that art.
It is cool art. Like, I'm genuinely really excited about the art. And I love cryptid themes. Like, I genuinely do. That out of all the themes for board games, more cryptids. Bigfoot especially. Bigfoot's huge. I love the whole theming about anything Bigfoot. I'm totally in to play almost anything.
I'm more of a Chupacabra guy, but that's because of the era we're in.
Sure, sure. Yeah, but I mean, I'll play just about any of them.
Bigfoot's actually right up there, too. The Yeti, Bigfoot. Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. That's my number six. I found Bigfoot.
All right. Number six last year was Maple Valley. I do own it. I do want to get it to the table. I just hasn't been able to get to the table lately. I've taken it a couple times to my other game group to get tried out. I haven't tried to pull it out on this one just because I have other things I want to get it done. Now we have a pile of obligation that we have to start getting into, too. Yep. But it looks really good. It looks very interesting. Very cutesy art. Kid Tables board games really do go above and beyond. And I am a big fan of Creature Comfort, so I want to see how this one is the follow-up. So my number six this year, I might think this is on your list. I don't know if you remembered this one. I checked. It's not out yet. It's only on pre-order. And this is from Devere. And it's also by another one of our favorite designers, Phil Walker Harding, and Steve Finn. And that is Cities. Cool. It is a city-building drafting game that has... And thank you, Vanquisher TCG, for raiding with us.
Hey, welcome all raiders.
I'm looking forward to playing this one. It looks really interesting. We got to see a little bit of it at the Gamma Expo. Yeah. And so... It's gorgeous, it's fun looking, and I can't wait to get this one played.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Spoilers, it's not on my list, but this would have been on my short list.
You forgot about it, did you?
Nope.
Okay.
All right, on to our number six.
Five.
Here we go. Heads again? Yes, heads again. Number five is a Phil Walker Harding game, but I will get into that in a minute because the one from last year was a Kane Clanko game. Nanatuke, I think, just barely came out. I don't know if it came out in the U.S. We finally got to see a copy at the Gamma Expo. Very cool stuff. Looks fun. 3D beautiful, like ice blocks and stuff, and you're building up patterns. It looks really neat, but I haven't owned it yet, so I don't know. But Sinister Institute is the one I wanted to talk about. It was a toss-up between either this or... Cities looks really good. I got to see a preview of it, how it works. It's an instant buy for me because I am a huge fan of Phil Walker Harding, as you are as well. So we knew that we are trying to figure out if it makes sense or like how much I enjoy, like, you know, knowing kind of the same thing. And it looks like he took a lot of elements from a lot of previous games, combined them in a really interesting way, almost like a worker placement style game, but tile laying, cool stuff. But the reason I chose Sinister Institute is because this is a 2-4 player cooperative game from him, where you are students of some kind of school that are trying to fend off the monsters in the swamps that surround your school. You are defending them away from the evil baddie and the various monsters that come in for a grade for your exam. You're trying to get an A+. Kind of a weird theme. But Phil Walker Harding and Cooperative, I'm already on board just because from? Of that as well.
Because I haven't heard of this one.
This one is coming from Mojito Games.
Oh, that might be why. I don't really follow a lot of Mojito stuff.
Yeah, so. Neither. I don't normally either. But the art looks really good. Phil Walker Harding. So, I mean, that's all that's announced.
Is this going to crowdfunding or is it going to come in directly? Because Mojito is mainly just crowdfunding.
I think so. Yeah.
Well,
we'll see.
You know, but that one actually has me intrigued.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So my number five, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so my number five last year is a game I did actually get to play, and I enjoyed a lot, and this is The Fox Experiment. Elizabeth Hargrave. I like it mostly because, like, the first phase is the only one where you got to do in turn order. And it's basically you take a male fox, you take a female fox, or you take what you're going to determine in the next round. And so you're going to do here, and this is your reward. You'll get to be first, but now you're not going to get really anything if you take that very first spot. If you go here, you get this little reward, and you can do this. I really did enjoy that aspect of it. But everything else is you get your dice, you roll your dice. It's kind of a roll and write. And so you're marking all this stuff off, and you play over a certain amount of rounds. I can't remember how much it is. But, yeah, no, I was a big fan of it. I enjoyed it a lot, Fox Experiment. But my number five this year... what I'm looking forward to is I knew nothing about this until we saw it at the Gamma Expo. And then I got super, super excited when the lovely Reyna Medina from Pandasaurus Game was explaining it to us. So we've talked about NAR already. We've talked about Mind Up already.
Yeah.
This is the next hot game for me coming from Pandasaurus, and it's a dexterity game. This is Box Top Pinball Haunted House. And I love everything. I'm a big fan of Tumbling Dice. It's one of my favorite dexterity games of all time. I love the way Ice Cool works by using all the boxes that are come in there. Yep. It combines those two. It basically, you make a pinball machine with the boxes that come in the game, plus the actual box top or bottom. Yeah,
multiple layers.
Multiple layers. So there's like three or four layers. And you're basically shooting your dice and trying to score your most points by getting into a certain area or knocking something out. You don't want to get into the traps because you lose your thing, so you're not going to get points. You're trying to also get into like the bonus sections or getting furthest down. But other players can knock you off the board as well or knock you into the holes in the thing. This way you lose your ball in a sense. Everything was explained to us about that, and I'm like, nope, shut up, take my money. Here it is, right here. Yep. Let's go. Gimme. I'm looking forward to this one. I think this is going to be a really neat, and I'm surprised no one's ever done this. As much as I like Tumbling Dice,
right,
the price point on this game alone is going to get more and more.
It's like a third of
Tumbling Dice. Yeah, because I think you get a good Tumbling Dice is, what, $80, $90?
Yep, something like that.
This one alone is $30.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, Pandasaurus really got me interested with this one. I really want to get this played. Once I saw that, I was like, gimme.
Yep.
So, Box Top Pinball Haunted House.
Cool. All right, and on to our number fours. Me again. All right, number four. So, this one is not yet on Board Game Geek.
Hey. Last week?
Last year. Last year, one of my anticipated games, I'm not used to it because I'm going in order and I put my last year's after. Anyway,
yeah,
that's my excuse. So an abstract strategy game, you know how much of an abstract strategy game fan I am. And this was the latest in the Gigamic series. This is Kowale. And I do own a copy now. I have played it a number of times. Cool little Moncala-style mechanisms. You're trying to get four in a row from opposite sides of the board. And the way you do that is by placing down one of your pieces on top of some stones, then moving them around, hopefully distributing them the right way. Beautiful components, look like the stacking stones at like different
cairns. Yeah, no, it looks really nice. Yeah.
Really cool. Love it. Gigamic knocked out of the park with that one. All right, but with that being said, this year is also the latest in a series that I am a huge fan of the series. And this one is not yet on Board Game Geek, because there's very little information about it. I only know about this because in one of the previous games in the series, there is a catalog, and two of the games at the time are kind of like blanked out a little bit, kind of being a little hush-hush.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, that was the game that I'm specifically talking about is called Ultimion. And this is the latest in the Oniverse. A big fan of Impatience games, solo modes on those, all of the Oniverse games I own already, and I like them all. It's always hit well for me, and this is the next one in that list. I think they're going to reprint Urbion first, which was an older one.
Yeah.
And then once they reprint that, because that never got a second edition, like from Z-Man games.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it was older than all those. So when that comes out, I think after that it will be Ultimion, because Stellarion was already really good, Siberion was really fun. Yeah, I mean, they're a rockin' game company, and I am very much looking forward to Ultimion. Doubt it'll be next year, but we'll find out.
Yeah, no, sounds intriguing. I need to play some of the other Oniverse games. I've only played on Irem.
Yeah.
I want to try Siberion.
Yeah.
And there's a couple others I do want to, like, what is the kite one?
Arion.
That's the one I do want to try a lot. Yeah.
The one that I would recommend over all of them, that if you want the next step from just like how smart the mechanisms are, Nautilion
was the one. Okay, yeah, that's another one I'm intrigued about too.
Yeah, because all you're doing is you're trying to get certain things before or collect the spaces you move on it. It's a roll and move,
mm-hmm.
which works really well, actually. roll three dice, you choose which one goes backwards, which one goes forward, and which one you set aside. That's all it is, and it works really well.
Cool. So, my number four last year is another game that I have played. In fact, I think there's only two more games on this list I haven't played, but we'll get into why.
Okay.
But this one I did play. It's probably my least favorite Thunderworks game I have played, even though I do like it a lot. And it's just because I do like Thunderworks games a lot. But it's just not my style of the game. And this is The Dawn of Ulos.
It is
a choir fantasy, if you want to really go to it. You enjoyed it enough because it's like, I played a choir. Yeah. So, yeah.
I like a choir.
Yeah. And so it does a lot of that, a little bit more steps than you would expect, but it's quite simple. I did enjoy it. It was fun. But yeah, Dawn of Ulos. My number
four
this year, for anticipated, is another Devir game. And this one intrigues me a lot. I think you might know what this one is.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name of it, but I know what game it is.
Which one is it?
It's the Rock one, right?
Yeah, you're exactly correct. This is Rock Hard 1977.
Yeah.
This is a game designed by the bassist from The Runaways, the original bassist from The Runaways, Jackie Fox. It is a Devir game, as I said. It's basically worker placement, kind of set collection. You're basically all starting up a band. You're trying to hit it big in the 1970s. The theme alone intrigues me because we need more musical games.
Absolutely.
And I love that generation of rock music because you had the big, like, Led Zeppelins, you had the, what was the other ones? The Runaways. Guns N' Roses, more 80s. Stuff like that. But you had, like, these
Eagles.
Yeah, Eagles. Right. Lynyrd Skynyrd. Stuff like that. I really love a lot of that rock aspect of that generation. Pink Floyd is another good one.
Oh, yeah.
Joan Jett, because she was originally in The Runaways, that kind of stuff. And the fact that it came from a designer who lived that experience, so she could actually tell that kind of story, it'd be like you making a game about magicians. So, because you've lived that experience, it's kind of neat how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I saw about this game looked really cool. Again, it's one of those games I got to see at the Gamma Expo. Didn't really get a chance to play it because they weren't really showing it off, except for like people to pick up. I think it's going to do well. I know I want to pick it up, a pre-order copy for myself. And it's just because it looks really, really good, too. Worker placement, set collection. You're trying to build up your band to be the more successful underground band and become famous. So, Rock Hard 1977.
Very cool. On to our number threes. Here we go. But it's mine.
Yep.
All right. So, I'll be starting this off again. Why are we flipping the coin at this point?
At this point, yeah.
So, last year, it was a game called Three Ring Circus. Also by Devir. Man, Devir's been hitting it, hasn't
it? I kind of think it's fine and funny that Three Ring Circus was your number three.
Yeah, it was my number three Ring Circus is the game. No, it great game. We've already played it.
It was fun.
Yep, you were very kind to get it for me from Secret Santa.
Yep.
Appreciate you again. And when we played it, man, did it do some fun stuff. Cool site collection, tableau building, worked really well. Big thumbs up for me.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, though, my number three this year that I'm anticipating, when we heard about this, like every time during the presentation that the publisher would say, okay, and then this is how this works, and then this, we're like, yes.
Go on.
So much to the point that I found the publisher afterwards. I was like, thank you for publishing this game because this is such a cool idea.
I knew it was on your
This
list.
Is Gateway Island
mm-hmm.
from Van Ryder Games. Oh my goodness, it sounds so awesome. Because, I mean, and the only reason it's number three is because I love the concept more than I will probably like the games. But I like what it's trying to do as a whole package.
Yeah.
And what this is, it's 21 smaller games. Each game focuses on a different mechanism or playstyle or something like that. And it uses, like, essentially, like, board game jargon, right? Anybody who listens to a podcast probably knows what a worker placement game is. If I say that to like, a grandma randomly on the street, they could be like, a who's a what now? Nobody knows what that means, right? And so these games, what they're trying to do is they are trying to use that information and teach you just the core ideas of it. So a worker placement game, you would just be putting out tokens, take actions, very simply, but it'd be a fundamentally really simple game. It's a gateway game for a reason, right? And there's 21 included in the box, and at the end of each of the instructions, if you like the game, it gives you recommendations for two different games on top of it that not necessarily from Van Ryder Games, right? For example, the Abstract Strategy game, it recommended both Boop and Santorini. Brilliant idea. I mean, obviously there's a tower defense one where they recommend like Castle Panic or Cooperative, one of the two. And so they sought permission from all these publishers. They're like, hey, we want to promote your games too, but this is how we're going to get people into the hobby. This is going to expand everything and teach people basic games. And then if you're a gamer, then you buy a copy of this and go teach your non-gamer friends how these generally work. And then if they start liking certain types, you know what your next steps are going to be. I don't see anything wrong with this, and I think this works really well. Hey, Luminous, thanks for joining us. But, yeah, I mean, it's such a cool idea. I can't appreciate it more. Gateway Island, Van Ryder Games, so excited for this.
All right, so, and to answer a Luminous question, no, this is not an April Fool's special. We're recording, normally we record Mondays now, but there's something that we're going to be doing tomorrow, actually, so stick around. So my number three last year is a game I still haven't played. I do own it, just one of those things that haven't got to the table.
Yeah.
And this is Freelancer. It is a Crossroad Games from Plaid Hat Games I'm looking forward to. Mm-hmm. I want to actually get the new one that they're going to be putting on Kickstarter.
Yep.
So Freelancers, that was my game from last year. And my number three anticipated game this year, and this is the one I was talking about where I played a full experience with this game. I know how it is, so I'm not going to get that full anticipation. That's why it's got knocked a little bit. You mentioned it on your short list. This is Ulta Match from Fireside Games.
Yes.
I was going to say Castle Panic Games. I'm like, no. So
they're more than that.
That's the thing, is I have played a full game of this, and I know how it works. And I've played it
twice.
And I like everything about it. And what's really cool is I played it with the publishers / designers, because both Justin DeWitt and Anne-Marie DeWitt have designed this one.
Friends of the podcast. Yeah.
Everything, just that alone, has made it really knock it out of the park for me. But the fact that the game is super fun, too, and that is the big thing, is that this game is, and you like to say, cooperative Uno in a sense. You've got a pyramid of cards out there.
I hate comparing it that way, but it's an adequate description.
You have a pyramid of cards that are set up in a certain way depending on the player count.
Mm-hmm.
You have a set number of cards in your hand. You cannot communicate what you have in your hand. There is a possibility where you could trade cards with the active player, be like, slide a card to them. You can't tell them what it is, but you'd be like, hey, I'm going to trade it, and they can accept whoever they want to trade with. And then what you're going to do is you want to clear out that pyramid. So you can either match the number or match the color. But the hook is, if you can either make an addition or subtraction by playing two cards, to say there's a seven green there. And so you play a four and three green, which adds up to seven.
Yep.
You're playing the number in the color. You make an ulti match. Then you get a bonus. You get a, because there's also cards in the center of the table that everybody can use. And so on your choices, you're either playing a card or you pass. If everybody passes in a round, you lose the game. And so you're trying to, that little push and pull, you're using the card in the little bottom row.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then that doesn't refill unless you make an ulti match. And then when you do, you draw two cards off the deck, you put one in the middle row and you put one in your hand.
Yep.
And so I loved every aspect of this game. It's a fun little game, and the price point alone is going to get a lot of people. Like we were talking about Mind Up earlier when we played it. Ulta Match is right up that alley. It's a small, little, quick card game. It's about $10 to $15 MSRP. Everybody's going to have a blast with this one. You could,
aiming for $9.99 MSRP. $10.
$10. So when you're talking about like Gateway Island, you can play this one with Grandma because it's such a simple game.
Who doesn't know how to match colors or numbers?
And make addition or subtraction.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is like even with us colorblind people, we can still play it because they even set it up where, like, this is a yellow card, so there's a Y on there telling you this is yellow. Or this is orange, so you need to use this and this to make this color. It tells you the color wheel as well, an aspect. So, Ulta Match, my number three.
Very cool. All right, on to our number twos. Here we go.
Oh, wow, my God, I get the start. Oh, that is kind of cool. So my number two, my number two from last year was a game, the last one on my last year list that I've actually played. And this one was a Rob Davio game called Stranger Things Upside Down. It's a neat little cooperative game that I suck at because it is actually quite difficult. It's from Simon, Rob Davio, based on the Stranger Things IP. It plays really well. I wish the component quality was a little bit better. It's not bad. Ended up picking up a copy when we were playing with ABQ Plays up in Albuquerque. Was able to get my own copy. It's fun. I like it a lot. It's quite difficult, in all honesty, because you're going around a board, you're doing a certain amount of actions, you're trying to play enough, like if you're only playing like the first scenario, you're trying to do enough from the first season to save Will.
Yep.
So you're doing all this different abilities, and you're playing different characters who have different abilities. It's tough. It is punishing at times, and it's fun. I do enjoy it, but yeah, it was very punishing. I played it twice, and I've not beat it yet. And the first... No, I take that back. I played it three times. We had to redo the first play because we got our butts handed to us in, like, the second round.
So. And ABQ Plays has only played it once since that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks for... I'm looking forward to getting it to the table again. But my number two this year, and it seems to be Thunderworks games get on my list all the time.
Yep.
And I mentioned Metro Runner was a short runner. Metro Runner might have been on my list if it wasn't for the fact that I saw this game. And
So I actually considered if this is the same one that you and I are, or if we're talking about the same game, I actually considered this on my list as well.
It probably is. Citizens of Sparks.
Yeah.
From Thunderworks game. It looks
like mechanisms look so smart.
Yeah, it's a very fun game. You have a set of cards out there. You draw one row of cards. It's a 3x3 grid. You draw one row, not column a row. You draw one row. And then if you don't pick anything, then there's points there. So you're like a little thing, kind of like a, I think a small world mechanism. If you don't pick it, then something goes on it to make it more enticing for someone to pick that row.
Sure.
Then you take those three cards and you activate every single ability of those three cards, if I remember correctly, in your tableau. So if you have two cards in that tableau, that's the strength of, say, the penguin guy.
Yep.
And so I love that. Most points at the end of the game. The artwork alone intrigues me because it's gorgeous artwork. Philip DeBerry, who did Eminent Domains, which is one of our favorite games.
Oh, no, not Eminent Domain. Eminent Domain Battle Cruisers,
yes.
Yeah.
Which is, I enjoyed that one game. The one time I played it. I like what he does. I seen what he does. That game looks so interesting. When they were showing it off, because it's funny, when this happened, we were on our way to the Gamma Expo. I got an email in my personal email account because I'm on the newsletter.
Yeah.
And so they were teasing it. And then I'm like, oh, what is this? And then I checked our actual email. And so because we were part of the hosted media, they all started sending us emails.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, what is this? Because they were talking about how they're going to show it off. We go there, we go to the hosted media, and saw that game, and I'm like, and then she was explaining it to us, and you were like,
okay. Yeah, even I was like, okay, hold on. This ain't quite what you normally do. Let's hear this.
And so this one is going straight to retail. It should be around Gen Con time. So Citizens of Spark from Thunderworks Games.
Yeah, and also, Thunderworks Games, amazing people. You should buy every game they've ever made, whether you like them or not. I'm telling you that right now.
I have, mostly.
They did me a massive favor. I love them. They are just amazing people. 100% agree. All right, that being said, my number two last year was a game that I also bought when hanging out with ABQ Plays. This is Walt Disney Animated. I've played it a number of times since. Oh, my goodness. I thought I was going to like this. I didn't think I was going to love this game. This is in my top 100 already.
It's good.
So good. So thematic. Very intriguing. Great components. Beautiful design. I hope they make more. I doubt they will. But yeah, another Funko Games. I mean, I'm a sucker for Funko Games, apparently. Specifically, the Prospero Hall team. Amazing stuff. What they do with IPs, brilliant. But this year is from a designer that we like quite a bit. You've already talked about one of his games earlier. But this game is not in his City Collection.
Okay, yeah.
This is Stefan Feld. This is a game that he's coming out with from a different company. I forget the company off the top of my head. This is called Civolution.
Yeah, I knew this one was going to be on your list.
Yeah.
This one, it intrigues me, but I'm kind of... I want to see how this works, because...
I want to see his takes on civilization games. And so, specific, I was just reading the theme right before the... Right before we went on the podcast, he was talking about how you're in like the future and you're being tested again. It's another school, like you need to pass your test kind of theme.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a cop out, but whatever. You are designed and creating civilizations and manipulating them. This is a heavyweight Euro game.
Oh yeah, yeah.
One like more than most Queen games, of course. Those are middleweight, midweight or so. This is one of his mid-heavy to heavy is what they described it as.
It's around Trajan. Complications.
Yeah, if not more. Right. Yeah. And so this has, I think, dice drafting, action selection, where the dice determine your actions. Every game that he uses dice in, I love.
Yeah.
So, with the exception of That's It. He uses a lot of dice in that game. That game is trash. But almost every other game where dice is used for action selection is amazing. And, like, Castles of Burgundy. Not Trajan.
Honestly, if you think about it, Stefan Feld made it is kind of action selection, but it was more of a... Right,
but he uses...
He made Roll and Move interesting in Merlin.
Yeah, he sure did. Absolutely. Now, I'm very much looking forward to it. Civolution by Stefan Feld.
I'm intrigued by this one. It didn't make my list. It didn't even make my honorable mention, just because I'm like, I already have a Stefan Feld that I'm more intrigued by Kathmandu, so that's why I was like, I'll just push it to the side.
Right.
All right, our number ones.
Number ones, here we go. All right, I'm starting us off. So, my number one last year was a game this was the second time he showed up on the anticipated list, Matt Leacock. He didn't announce, it got leaked that he is making a fourth Forbidden game, and this was Forbidden Jungle. I've since played it, I like it, it's pretty good, it is my third favorite in the series. That's about all I can say. There's a lot of things to consider. I don't foresee it happening all that much, but I do plan on it coming out or playing more as I get used to it. But there's a lot of moving parts and a little bit off-putting. It's still good, and I'm very glad I have it, but still, either way. With that being said, my number one most anticipated game, and I knew this was going to be on my list. I didn't realize it was going to be number one. I did a Pub Meeple ranking system, and sure enough, everything you said about it already, I 100% agree. Do you know which game it is?
I've already said it, huh?
You've already said it.
I don't know. Citizens of the Spark, you said no. So nope. Let me look at my list real quick. Yep. Box Top Pinball.
Yeah, Box Top Pinball. Oh my god, I'm a sucker for pinball. I'm a sucker for dexterity. I'm a sucker for like unique uses of components. I already like the game that it's kind of themed from. I like everything it's doing. The new theming, the haunted house style, the great component. It just, everything hits for me. This is a guaranteed instant buy. I literally threw my wallet at Reina Medina. I didn't throw it at her. I threw it on the table. I was like, here you go. Just take what you need. I need this copy right now, though.
Yeah, no.
You know, like, whatever you need to take from that wallet, like, just do it. I need to walk away with this copy. Yeah. And she almost accepted that. I don't think she was allowed to accept that, but I would have walked away with it. I can't wait for this.
No, game. I'm looking forward to it. It looks really
100%.
Good.
100%. This is up there with everything else. I can't wait. Pandasaurus is just hitting it every time. So
it was called Box Top Pinball Haunted House.
Yep, Box Top Pinball Haunted House. So which leads me to think that there's going to be a series of games in the Box Top Pinball if this does well. Not so much the Haunted House theme, but probably other themes.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait.
I heard there's going to be other themes on it. It's just going to be kind of a system type thing, so...
Yep.
But no, I agree with your thing. So, if you notice, I was looking at the screen over here, so I was trying to see information for my anticipated game for my number one last year.
Yep. Hey, Heinz.
Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. It was anticipated. It was announced back in 2022. And still, there has been no news, and this is a Pandasaurus game that I was really looking forward to. One, it's Emerson Matsuchi. I'm a big fan of Emerson Matsuchi. Two, it's one of my favorite video games of all time. And so, the fact that they were going to make a card game, co-op card game, based off this IP, And it was supposed to come out Q3 last year, and there has been no information. Makes me highly disappointed with what's going on, because I don't know what's going here. And this is Persona 5 Royal. And so I haven't played it, because there has been no information since then. So, finally...
Real quick, I'm going to pause you. Thank you so much, Heinz, for subscribing. Thank you, Heinz. You automatically get 3 tickets entered in for your potential copy of Matches. Thank you for doing that.
All right, so my most anticipated game for 2024. I'm surprised you haven't thought about this one, because I still don't think you have guessed it. I've only played it partially from Gamma Expo.
Okay, so let me think back. And you said Harvest was only on your honorable mentions?
Mm-hmm. I've only played one round of it. Really, really did enjoy it.
Not Nikojima, because you didn't play that. Not
Seaside. I did play Nikojima.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was fun.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't...
I played at the game night. You were downstairs playing games with Brad.
Oh. Ooh, because I don't think I was up there during most of that, so I don't remember that. So it wasn't Rivers.
I told you I played it.
I don't know.
So I played this game while our mutual friend, Dammit Dom, was playing Aqua. This one's also from the
Aqua. Oh, wait, no, I already know. I know. Yeah, Gnome Hollow.
Gnome Hollow.
How did I forget this?
So everything about this game is intriguing me. Like I said, I played a prototype copy of it. I only played a partial first round of it because they wanted to get more people to try it out. They were just announcing it, showing it off at the Gamma Expo. But yeah, it is a very interesting game. The way it works, it's tile placement with some worker placement. You're basically taking a tile, placing it out. You're trying to finish off different flower paths. Mm-hmm. Because once you place your worker out there, you're trying to get those mushrooms. And then you're trying to sell those mushrooms to get a certain amount of points. And if you sell a certain way or you finish something completely, you get to start getting flowers, which will give you bonuses as you're going. Everything about this game is just knocking out of the park. I love tile placement. I love worker placement. I love the little cutesy artwork. I love kind of naturist type games. This one's your gnome's basically working on a flower garden.
Yep.
Oh man, I loved everything about it. To my point, if this is releasing in Germany next year, it's probably going to be my pick for Kinderspiel of 2024.
That was a lot of the buzz of the show. Now, did it have magnets in the board too?
I think they were saying they're going to be magnets. I only played
something about
that. I only played the prototype version of the game. So the art wasn't final.
Yeah.
None of it was really done. Other than what they're showing, because this is supposed to be about a Gen Con release later this year. So yeah, everything about this game has me intrigued. I like it so much from my small play of it.
Yeah.
So and Op just is really knocking it out of the park, because I want to play Aqua. That looks really good. And now this one,
absolutely. No, I mean, what Op it, we talked about this at the anticipated companies or stuff from the show.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about the Op and how they're just absolutely killing it right now. Aqua looks awesome. You know, I want a copy of Aqua for myself. That Gnome Hollow looks really great. A lot of their other ones, Stock Exchange, which is one that they announced, it all looks really cool. But we hope you enjoyed that. If any of those games sound intriguing to you, they do to us. So I don't know what else to tell you other than keep listening. Hopefully we'll get them sometime within the next year. Hopefully all those will be released. Unlikely. But and hopefully we'll get them all played. But with that being said, if you ever want to email us directly, you certainly can. You can email us at everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com. Whether that's to say hello, give us ideas for future episodes, or more importantly, enter in the contest to win a chance of one of 2 copies of Matches that we're going to be sending for free to some of our viewers. There's a number of ways you can enter. I'm going to repeat those right now. First off, follow us on Twitch. If you're listening to this right now, go do it. It's awesome. We love chatting with our friends. ABQ Plays, Creative Chaos, Heinz, Illuminous, everybody else who joined us today. Thank you for tuning in and rating our channel. We appreciate that again. And email us with the password. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go back. Follow us. If you subscribe, you get 3 bonus tickets if you subscribe sometime within the month that we're running this contest.
Mm-hmm.
We have 2 more weeks after this to enter in the contest, so be sure to stay tuned. Also, If you follow us on YouTube or subscribe on YouTube so you get notified with us, then you'll automatically get a ticket. And if you follow us on Instagram, which is instagram.com/everydayboardgames, follow us there so that way you can see some of our posts. We've been a little slow lately, but we're going to keep doing that a little bit more and more. That also gets you a ticket. But then finally, to get your last ticket, every episode we give a passphrase. This week's passphrase, playing with fire. You don't have to whisper it. Put that in the body of the email with a way to contact you. In the subject line, put contest, and you get a chance to win one or two copies of Matches.
All right, and all video re-uploads are found on YouTube under youtube.com/@everydayboardgames. And if you like what we do, there are three things you can do to help us grow on that platform. Subscribe if you're not, like the video, and comment down below and tell us your thoughts on the subject.
And join us live for live filmings of our episodes so you can be part of the conversation at twitch.tv/everydayboardgames. And make sure you follow us and subscribe if you have the opportunity.
As well as all audio versions can be found on most podcast platforms under Everyday Board Games Podcast. This includes Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, Podbean, and Apple.
So we want to thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I've been your host, Daniel.
And I've been your host, Daniel.
And we want to thank you for listening to Everyday Board Games.
And remember, every day is a good day for board gaming.